You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, Spine Number 80, Sam Raimi's Darkman, featuring fake superheroes, real superheroes, deadites, shotguns, chainsaws, helicopters, grenade launchers, multiple masks, Liam Neeson, wooden machine gun legs, lasers, liquid skin, Jeff Fahey, and sexpot Frances McDormand. Martin.
Yes.
Take the fucking elephant. Back with another edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining me as always is Martin Carlson. Martin, we've done a couple for you. Now I think this is one for me. Darkman.
Yes, but I also love this movie.
You do also love this movie. This is a real shared one for us, but like, it's weird when I tell people, and I was telling people we were doing this for an episode, I would be like, Darkman, and they'd be like, what? What is that? And like, for me, this is perhaps one of the movies I've watched the most in my life. Like, it really is one of my favorite films and one that I revisit. I looked on Letterboxd, like, I've logged it 3 times and I probably watched it even more than that, like, over the years. But it's because, for me, this was like a VHS classic. I remember my parents loving this movie, particularly my dad. I think they even went and saw it in the theaters because it was a pretty big hit. It was a big critical hit at the very least. I remember seeing the ad in the newspaper in the Philadelphia Inquirer had that awesome, almost like superhero art with this dude looking like the Phantom of the Opera.
I think it's Drew Struzan who did like all that art.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. And like, it had all these great pull quotes comparing it to like Batman and Phantom of the Opera. It was like every like, you know, I was probably 10 years old or whatever when it first came out, but it's like a 10-year-old kid's like wet dream, especially if you're getting into like action movies and comic books and like horror stuff. And like, I didn't even know who Sam Raimi was at this point, but like, I remember tracking it down, my dad bringing it home on VHS and like begging him to watch it because he wouldn't stop talking about it, like seeing it in theaters and then having it blow like my mind completely. It's another kind of in like, we've talked about this before with like Hard Target, but like there's a few movies from the early 90s from kind of like that action cinema canon of like Hard Target's one, a lot of the Steven Seagal stuff, the Van Damme stuff. But like Darkman was one of those that like my dad just brought home. The Last Boy Scout is another big one that my dad brought home and I saw like way too early, but unlike like Blue Velvet or Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer or whatever, like this completely rewired my brain to be like, dude, action movies are fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think we rented it from the library because like the library had a pretty good selection of Franklin and they brought it home and it was rated R. But I remember for some reason they let me watch it. And it's honestly not a hard R movie. Like it's
Darkman?
I don't think so.
I would disagree. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I watched it with the girl I've started dating and she'd never seen it before. And she actually commented out loud. She was like, this is fucking insanely violent. Like, I think it's way more brutal. And like the violence, when it hits, like hits home a lot harder. As it goes on, it gets a little more cartoonish, especially with like the chases and that huge helicopter set piece and everything near the end. But like, there's like horror movie levels of violence and even like the makeup in this is incredible. It's like true like Sam Raimi Evil Dead style makeup.
Well, yeah, it's very similar. The like lattice work of his like musculature looks like the demon Ash.
Yeah.
In Army of Darkness.
Like, yeah, which would come after this.
Yeah, and this was Tony Gardner, I believe, did the makeup. But I remember seeing it as a kid, and that's what really stuck out to me was, how did they do that? This was one of those makeup jobs where I was like, wait, where are his teeth? Because you could see, you know, it's obviously on top of it, but it's such an amazing makeup job. They also, like, really bury the lead in a good way. They make you wait for it.
Yeah.
For a full view of, like, how fucked up he really got.
Because it really does the Phantom of the 100%, Opera thing. 100%. To where it's about a guy who, I guess if you've never seen Darkman, we're going to set it up for you, is that, like, it's Sam Raimi's basically invented comic book superhero. He wanted, didn't the story go, I think you actually know it better than I do, is that he wanted to make the Shadow, and he didn't get the opportunity. It ended up being Russell Mulcahy, who made the movie in, like, 94, I want to say, with
94,
Alec.
Yeah.
With Alec Baldwin as the Shadow. But that was, like, Sam Raimi's big, almost like one of his white whales that he always wanted to do. And he was so mad about not getting to do it, he basically wrote Darkman. Well, I think he also, like, Chuck Farrar, who also would go on to write Hard Target and Navy SEALs.
Which was produced by Sam Raimi.
Which was produced by Sam Raimi when he brought John Woo over.
Yeah.
Chuck Farrar basically wrote this. Sam Raimi basically discovers it. I shouldn't make it sound like Raimi basically invented Darkman or whatever, because there is another writer. But, like, he latched onto this and decided this is going to be my comic book movie instead. And he ends up, like, I remember when Darkman came out, I went to a comic book shop as a kid looking for the Darkman comics because I thought it was actually adapted. And it wasn't until later that I found out that, like, no, this is just something he made up.
Well, they did novelizations, and I had one.
Yeah.
I had a few, and it was, like, kind of the further adventures of Darkman. It was before the sequels came out. And it was just kind of a thing that they'd always have those, like, you know, anything that had a modicum of success would, you know, have some kind of, like, spin-off books.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I remember, I think I've told this on the podcast before, but one of the books, my mom would buy me books from the grocery store and stuff and bring me one home almost like a week, but she would buy a lot of the movie novelizations, and I had a Demolition Man novelization and one for Clint Eastwood's The Rookie.
I had Judge Dredd. I had Alien Resurrection. I had Spawn.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff.
A lot of, like, weird ones, and that was also kind of like what Tarantino talks about with the novelizations and stuff. It was a good lesson of being like, hey, this isn't, like, the movie, like, 100%. There'd be scenes that don't exist and everything. But Darkman, it did. Like, it felt like something that pre-existed. It couldn't have just come out of the ether. He couldn't have just come up with this. And they really did. And, like, it's also post-Batman. So it feels very highly indebted to, like, Tim Burton, and not necessarily visually, but all just like, hey man, Batman's a huge hit. What do we do? Like, how do we get into the superhero market? It feels like that's partially how Raimi got it made, is like, well, we've got this script over here, and, like, we could do it this way and really cash in on that.
My buddy Bo one time made a good point where after Batman, Hollywood seemed to learn the wrong lesson.
Yeah.
And that people did, honestly, it was a time where they could have struck and done another Superman, more other actual superheroes that people knew. I think they were unaware of the actual growing real fan base of comic books. All these movies came out of, like, Dick Tracy that no one was asking for, or Darkman, which is an un-IP IP, you know?
Well, Dick Tracy's a weird one, though, because you have Beatty making that movie, and that was kind of a passion project for him, too.
But even the way they advertised that,
oh, yeah, it was
full-on Batman.
And oh, 100%.
The whole design of that movie, the whole colorful...
The colors, the trading cards for all the villains. I remember having those.
I had, like, toys.
It came from, you're right, though. It came from this time period, which is would go on to become ironic, seeing that it's Sam Raimi, is that this pre-comic book cinema timeline where, like, they just didn't know what to do with these things. And they were also adapting stuff like Tank Girl, you know?
Right, right. Or Barbed Wire, all the Dark Horse stuff.
Barbed Wire, yeah. Judge Dredd Judge with Dredd. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah. Like, and often doing a bad job of it. Like, a very, like, they didn't understand the IP, you know, and kind of going off on their own.
Yeah, just using it almost as, like, a jumping off point. Often, for, like, Judge Dredd's a great example of, like, we just made a Sylvester Stallone movie and called it Judge Dredd.
Well, and the whole thing of in the comics, he never takes his mask off. And Stallone was like, I can't wear a mask for more than 20 minutes this movie.
Yeah.
People want to see my face. And it's like, well, I'm not sure, but like.
Where Carl Urban was like, I have the best chin ever. And then I'm going to let Dredd do all the talking rules. For me. Dredd. Yeah. Fucking Dredd's awesome.
It's a good one. But yeah, it's that really weird era of like, they were figuring out, and actually. Strangely, Val and I and our friends watched the Super Mario Brothers movie last night from 93.
Jesus.
Which, it was
although
funny.
People ride for that movie.
Well, and actually, it's a lot better than I remember because I'm not looking at it trying to. I don't want a Super Mario movie. I just watch it as its own thing. It's a, by today's standards, $107 million budget. Like, they built huge sets. It's crazy.
Oh, it was a huge disaster as a production.
It made 50% of its budget back.
Right.
Like, worldwide. It was a disaster.
I mean, and it also spawned a great Bob Hoskins, like, soundbite to where he was like, what was it that he didn't know? He signed on to play Mario in the Super Mario Brothers movie and didn't really know who Mario was until his kids were basically like, they showed him the game on Nintendo. They're like, yeah, we play it. And he's like, I used to do, like Shakespeare. Now I'm in the Super fucking Mario Brothers movie.
But it was that weird era of like, and not to get too on a tangent, but like when it comes to like superhero movies and any kind of IP, video games or comic books or like fantasy stuff or fantasy books, is Hollywood didn't know or care about authenticity. And now it's like fetishized with like Marvel movies and DC of like the or Star Wars, right? Oh, Gleep Glop has a blue cape instead of a red cape, you know, the online warriors are going to be pissed.
Well, it's the whole narrative of the nerds won.
Right.
You know, and honestly, that narrative does kind of start to take shape with Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, which would come next.
Yeah.
Because Sam Raimi was such an icon inside of a certain, we'll call it like ain't it cool news kind of subculture of like dudes who just grew up loving comic books, going to the video store like us, watching all this action stuff, loving the Evil Dead movies and Army of Darkness, making Army of Darkness like a cult favorite and everything. And then, you know, they go online and make Raimi out to be this kind of god in genre cinema in like the early part of his career. So him then returning to it for Spider-Man became like a huge victory.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a kind of like, honestly, I know you don't like this movie, but narratively, it reminds me of the same thing of when Rian Johnson ends up getting to make a Star Wars film.
Right, right.
Is that it's a real, like, he's one of us
exactly.
feeling,
yeah, 100%.
You know, with Raimi. And like, meanwhile, Raimi's like not only producing Hard Target movies, but he's actually moving forward and making more complicated, dramatic stuff with, you know, he partners with Billy Bob Thornton to make The Gift. He makes a Simple Plan also with Billy Bob, like in maybe the best performance of his career.
And Bill Paxton, too, is one of his best.
Bill Paxton, like, man, that movie's absolutely incredible. But it Raimi's stuff after his genre stuff reminds me of when Cronenberg started making like Dead Ringers and then even more so like History of Violence and Eastern Promises and stuff like that, is that it's almost like he was like, I've made my horror movies and my weird like gloppy gore stuff, and now I actually want to make not necessarily real movies, because they're all real movies, but like serious films.
Well, and I mean, we were texting about it earlier, and I said a really similar filmmaker in terms of career and who came after Raimi, career and also terms of style and just genre, is Peter Jackson, right? You have, you know, Peter Jackson does these DIY stuff. He does Dead Alive, which is basically his like Evil Dead. He hits the scene, obviously a bigger budget than the original Evil Dead. It's very
closer to Evil Dead 2.
Evil Dead 2, very gory, very gonzo. And then similarly, you have him go dramatic and do Heavenly Creatures, which is
what a movie,
which is amazing, and then showed his chops dramatically, which has allowed him to get Lord of the Rings. Similarly, I think that's what happened with you wouldn't have Spider-Man without The Gift and without Simple Plan in terms of the trust of, okay, this guy's just not a goofball, like this is really like hard-hitting stuff.
I think it also helps that he, starts his own production shingle too with Ghost House.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he's producing things like the Grudge remake and everything as it goes along. Like he has, beyond being this scrappy, no budget dude who like strapped a fucking camera to like a wood plank and ran it across the woods and Evil Dead, you know, like he's not always the kid from Michigan. Like he actually went out and became a producer. He became like an actual Hollywood figure and really like kind of set his chops in stone, we'll say.
He seems to also have a lot of loyal friends. Like he's the kind of guy who obviously you have Bruce Campbell, but like he's friends with the Coens. They came up together. Like,
well, Ethan Coen like helped edit Evil Dead.
Yeah. And they, I mean, they did Crime Wave together. He's in Miller's Crossing, you know, like same where he's
Hudsucker.
Yeah. He just, it's,
well, I mean, Frances McDormand being the love interest in Darkman.
Yeah, it's a lot of like Venn diagrams.
Yeah,
crossing,
which is one of, because that's, I mean, to take it back to Darkman is like that's the thing that makes this movie beyond it being just completely insane and entertaining and everything is that it's one of the things that makes it so memorable is that it's so distinctly a Sam Raimi movie beyond just the visual stuff is that like who else would have been like, you know, who would make a great superhero in 1990? Liam, like pre Oscar Schindler, you know, Liam Neeson, you know, a guy who most people know from what, like Crawl?
Yeah, he had been around in a lot of like,
he'd done some stuff, but he hadn't done like a whole lot.
He's Excalibur as well, right? He would show, yeah. Like, he would show up a lot as just like Knight number four or like, a, you know, part of like the raiding party kind of thing.
But he really stumbles on gold with Neeson there because what? He's winning Best Actor 4 years later?
Yeah, four. Well, I think it's really wild about Raimi is we were talking over dinner, like, is he's kind of a tonal master. Like, he has. Yeah. And again, because his ability to very quickly switch between like Shakespearean, this is, I'm stealing your idea, like Shakespearean drama and seriousness of like these really heavy scenes of Darkman realizing that, you know, it's like RoboCop seeing himself. This is what I look like. And it's basically the same plot as RoboCop.
Well, and the other thing is, doesn't it feel like it takes place down the block from RoboCop? Yeah. Like that industrial yard at the end looks identical.
Yeah.
To the one they have, like to where Murphy gets executed in.
No, it's where he fights them again later on, where they drop the stuff on
the toxic waste and all that shit.
Yeah, like, well, it does feel like that again. That '90s like uber urban violent. Like every film had. I mean, moving up to the Crow, right? It's these like all the same plot too of this guy who's killed unceremoniously in quotes. And then comes back to, you know, exact revenge on the people who killed him.
See, that's where I push back to against the whole, like, you didn't think is that hard R-rated violent when I watched Darkman. Because Darkman reminds me of RoboCop. Even in the violence in the same way that Verhoeven, like, you're watching a man get shot 80 times and squids, like, explode on his body. But you're also kind of laughing. It's like, that's how I feel. Like that rush from the boardroom where you're like simultaneously like hysterically laughing, but also mortified by what's on screen. Like I get that from the lab attack in Darkman where they're shoving his head and he's even doing the Raimi cam.
The glass.
With each one where he's going through the glass. Like it's to your point, like the tonal mastery of like, it's a hilarious gag and he's almost doing like Three Stooges bits, but at the same time, like you feel that glass every time his head goes through it and it hurts.
Yeah. Well, and that's something you just can't forget is like this guy has seemingly a bottomless pit or just a bottomless bowl of creativity. Like when it comes to like how to, he blocks action scenes so interestingly. And so wild. And even in a movie like Darkman, it becomes part of like the whole style consistently in that movie.
Yeah.
But you watch something like Simple Plan and there's still moments where the birds attack Bill Paxton in the plane and it becomes a Sam Raimi horror scene. Or in Spider-Man, right? Where it's like, you're talking about part two where Doc Ock's, his arms come to life while he's on the operating
table. Oh, yeah.
And it becomes an Evil Dead scene, you know? So it's like, he never misses an opportunity to like how can I shoot this most interesting way? And again, to see where we're at with Marvel IP, where it's like, stand in front of a green screen. You know, here's this guy who is like every scene. And it's also not, hey, second unit, make my action film for me. It's all Raimi. Like, you can tell.
Well, and also I think there's almost like the spirit of like Jackass in him, for lack of a better term, because like of the DIY roots that he comes from making Evil Dead and that stuff, like out in the woods and on their own with no budget, coating each other in like Karo syrup and shooting in extreme cold and torturing the actors and like all the physical stunts that like Bruce Campbell goes through, like that still translates to Dark Man, particularly in like that rooftop chase when Durant comes with the helicopter and is shooting grenades at Darkman. He's like sliding down railings and leaping over ledges while like explosions are happening behind him. And then there's that entire where he jumps on the chain and the helicopter's dragging him. That looks like somebody could have died. Like there's a real daredevil quality that feels again with the same energy of like, we're just kids in the woods again. We actually have a budget now, though.
I think it's really cool to watch making of a lot of his films, even the later stuff where there's more of a budget. Is one of my favorite making ofs is they were doing Spider-Man 2. And it's funny how watching this making of stuff, and obviously we know his very close relationship with Bruce Campbell, and similarly with Tobey Maguire on all three Spider-Man movies, was I'm going to put these guys through a little bit of hell.
Oh, yeah. Right,
because it's almost like you were making the point off mic about...
Well, he more or less made Alison Lohman quit acting after Drag Me to Hell. Like, she was like, I'll never do this shit again. Like, he destroyed that woman's psyche by, like, shitting maggots on her and stuff.
Yeah, it's less the psychological fuckery of, like, a Kubrick. It's more like, I'm going to pour gross stuff on you.
But again, it's the Jackass thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's literally, he's Johnny Knoxville, and he's like, I'm just going to fuck with you the whole time because I want your... Like to use your word, your authentic reaction. Like there's no faking. You can throw CGI maggots on somebody and they can act scared and they're like, but like when that witch in Drag Me to Hell fucking vomits bugs onto her and you watch the behind the scenes and they're actually doing it. Like that's like you can't fake that. Like like there's no way. Whether you're an actor or just a normal person, it's going to be revolting.
Yeah, it's, well, and there's a moment in Spider-Man 2 where it's early in Act 1 where it's like you're seeing that Peter Parker is like totally like not making ends meet. He's like missing his classes, like because he's Spider-Man, right? And there's this part where he drops his books and there's this whole thing of like people walking by and hitting him with their book bags, like walking by while he's
crouching.
And one of those is Sam Raimi. Like, and I watched that scene being shot just like on the special feature, and you see Tobey Maguire, he wallops him in the face, and Sam Raimi's like just laughing like a little child. And even stuff from Spider-Man 1 of him dropping rubble, there's a shot of like Spider-Man, and it's like he's on himself. He's that guy who's like dropping rubble, like it's got to look right. And it's
but he's
fun.
Like a little kid, that he's playing with his toys, and it's almost like it's no different than like a kid with a, you know, an 8mm camera in the backyard with army men just like being like, oh no, and then here comes the sand wave, and like throwing it over like his army men and like covering them. Like but I also think that glee and that mania, like, it really translates into the energy of watching these movies, even when he has these huge budgets. It's why something like, and I kind of still like this movie. It's obviously like probably his worst movie, but like Oz, the Great and Powerful.
Right.
You lose a bit of that energy when he gets to that level. The same with like the Doctor Strange sequel, which I mean, you argue is not exactly his film because he comes in late in the Marvel process and everything. And like, he's more or less almost like a project manager at that point. But like, you know, even in those movies, like the Oz film, like the attack of the flying monkeys in that feels like something out of a Sam Raimi horror film.
Well, there's that one scene too, where there's an explosion and Oz is in the basket of his,
like hot air balloon,
and it's like these three spikes go tum tum tum. It's like that's a Sam Raimi moment. Like he always even in a film like that, there's these opportunities for like there's a musical nature too to like, or the, or it makes me think of my favorite scenes in, I think it's Evil Dead 2, where you're busting through the doors one by one, the chase scene, you know?
Well, and it's a good point to kind of like transition with that, like, not, you were talking about his storytelling earlier and how good he is as like a visual storyteller, even with like kicking the book bags and stuff like that. A lot of that feels like his love of not just like Three Stooges, but almost like silent film language that shines through. There's that amazing scene early on in Darkman where Peyton, Liam Neeson's character, is with his girlfriend and they're, you know, watching those slideshows together or whatever and commenting on what they look like when they're youthful. And then she tries to get it on with him and Sam Raimi reverses and you watch it through shadows, through the projector, but it looks like something that would be out of like an old Buster Keaton movie or something where they would basically be like, where they were using it as necessity too, to where it's like, well, we can't show them have sex, but how can we like, you know, insinuate this kind of love affair is happening. And like, he likes that. It's that very gleeful, almost cartoonish kind of energy that comes into it. Cause he just likes the visual storytelling of it all.
Well, there's also an element of like that Boy Scout David Lynch to him as well, of like, not at all about in terms of utter voice, but more about that kind of like, he's kind of a kid who grew up reading comic books in a small Midwestern town.
Yeah.
You know, and that he's a good kid. And while there is violence in his stuff, none of it feels in bad taste. Like, it's goofy and it's gross, but it's gross out, you know, and none of it feels like mean spirit. Like, you compare the Evil Dead remake to Evil Dead.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a good point.
To show how you can
where Fede Alvarez is like actually wants to hurt you.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi is just kind of messing around with you and having fun.
Yeah, and it's just like, and it's obviously goes into like using his performers like, you know, Bruce Campbell, where it's just like, ah, you know, just the complete shrill goofiness of it.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is that one of his most undervalued skills as a director is that he gets incredible performances out of these actors, like dating all the way back to Bruce Campbell, who gets better through each, you know, Evil Dead installment, where Army of Darkness, he becomes a straight up like leading man,
like a sexy leading man. Yeah.
And it's like, he gets these guys to really buy into the reality of the story that they're telling, no matter how silly it might be. Because that's the thing that's incredible about Darkman, is I get really emotionally wrapped up every time I watch it, because like, he plays this superhero and Phantom of the Opera kind of hybrid. Like, it's almost like gothic Shakespeare half the time. He loves this tragic romance of this monster hiding in the shadows. He almost becomes like a Lon Chaney character at certain points, like with the carnival scene, where it's like this guy who's out wearing a mask because he's deformed and has to live in the shadows. He wants to win this thing for his girlfriend, but he's called a freak the entire time. And like, the carnival music rises and rises and rises, and his mania goes along with it, to where it explodes in violence at the end. And like, has the infamous line, "Take the fucking elephant." But like, he loves the monster movie of it all, but doesn't lose the emotion of it. Is he the other person in this regard that he kind of reminds me of is Guillermo del Toro.
100%.
He has a real love for the monsters in his movie.
Well, you talk about another person who can so easily switch between doing like a Pacific Rim or a Hellboy and doing Devil's
Backbone. Or Crimson Peak.
Or doing Devil's Backbone.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, he can do these like dramatic period pieces up to these really big like tentpole kind of movies, you know, and they both of them also have a very good eye for doing their action. Like, they're very good action directors. And
they love noir language to a certain degree. I mean, Guillermo del Toro and Nightmare Alley, I know this is a movie where we kind of diverge in how much we both enjoy it, but like, there's no denying that Del Toro made a gorgeous film because he loves movies from that time period. And I think the same applies to Sam Raimi, is because like, the fedora and trench coat over Darkman's bandaged face and stuff, again, looks like something right out of like, he almost looks like a 40s heavy at certain angles.
Well, and also, like, he's a mix of so many, you know, you're looking for comic book, you know, heroes, but there was the character, I think the character was called the Unknown Soldier, and it was like, he was like that. He was a master of disguise.
Okay.
So I think it was a DC figure. And so,
I mean, he's also doing the Shadow.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing his version of the Shadow too. Yes,
exactly.
Like, you can't understate, like, how much of this movie is a response to losing one particular job and being like, okay, well, I'll just make up my own shit then. And it's like, and it's probably the most successful, like, example of that.
Yeah, I would say so. When it just shows, like, he, and that budget was obviously bigger than what he'd experienced before. And then I can only imagine his success on Darkman obviously leads to Army of Darkness, where it's like the, what, 30, 100 times the budget of even part two, probably.
Talk, you know, about an insane, like, blank check moment, too, what to where he's fuck? Like, you just made this hit film, Sam Raimi. What do you want to do next? Oh, I'm going to make the third Evil Dead movie, and I'm going to bring my buddy Bruce Campbell along, and we're going to, like, send him back into medieval times. I don't watch that movie in forever.
I haven't either. That's actually the first I saw. So my brother had it, and I didn't know it was Evil Dead 3 because I was a little kid.
Sure.
And we had it, and I was like, oh, it's just a cool movie. This guy going back, you know, in time, and, like, and I thought he was funny and cool as hell.
And he had a chainsaw for an arm.
Yeah, and the I love his metal hand he creates, too. And, like,
on the boomstick. And it's also, like, Bruce Campbell really embraces the action figure nature of Ash in that one. Like, he's fucking chiseled. Like, he almost looks like Sylvester Stallone at certain points. Like, he just looks great. And he really is, like, you can tell. That's a moment where a guy is literally, like, nobody's ever going to let me do this shit again. So I'm just going to milk it for all it's worth in, like, 85 minutes or however short Army of Darkness actually is.
Oh, I think he was already doing the Fangoria, like, signings, too, after Evil Dead 2.
Oh, yeah.
So he's already out in the scene and knows what his fans like. It's almost like one of the earliest examples of, like nerddom reflecting back on the creation of the next film.
Well, it's also, you can trace, it's almost like, you know, when you look at those charts of, like, the evolution of man from, like, primate right. to upright creature, like, Bruce Campbell from the original Evil Dead to Ash in Army of Darkness, they're almost different characters
yeah.
by the time he gets done with it, because he's just like, this is my leading man hero moment. I'm just going to turn this guy into, like, this bigger than life chainsaw armed, like, cartoon.
Well, yeah, and you know, you don't have...
Also, what a performance in that movie. It's like, it maybe... I know Evil Dead 2 gets all the love, but, like, maybe Campbell's best physical performance in some of Army of Darkness?
Oh, it's, I mean, like... And also, his... You don't get any of his monologuing in Part 2. All the monologuing, him giving shit to, like, all the medieval people...
Oh, the listen-up screwheads, all that
so
shit.
So fucking... Or he's like, huh? You want some? Just, like... I used to do this all the time as a kid. I thought it was the funniest shit I'd ever heard.
Oh, my God. He was the coolest motherfucker who ever walked the planet for, like, a little bit of time for yeah. me. Because, like, and also M. Beth Davids, super God. Hot in that movie. Like, it's just, it's a terrific film. But also, if you look at, you know, Evil Ash in Army of Darkness, I think you already said this, too, is that, like, he looks like Darkman.
Yeah.
Like, he has that crazy skull face and everything. Like, it's pretty incredible.
I mean, I also don't want to miss an opportunity to talk about Quick and the Dead, which I had not seen.
Yeah, that one goes unremarked upon too often.
That movie is
so much fun.
And it's not the movie of the episode. It is a ultimate face melter. That movie is fucking insane. And I think it pairs really well with Hard Target. It's that, I feel like him working with Wu, like, it's a fucking gunfighter movie. But it's like Leone, as he goes, what if Sergio Leone had a huge budget and everything was a retrograde zoom? Well, it's fucking crazy.
Oh, and it's kind of like if you watch, like, he's obviously a fan and student of a lot of these different kind of subgenres of cinema. It's kind of like how when you watch Crime Wave, even though it's wildly unsuccessful as a film itself, you watch it and you're like, oh, you wanted to do basically like an Italian Eurocrime kind of madcap cartoon thing like they were doing with like Bud Spencer and them over in the 70s in Italy. And it's like you just... this version kind of sucks, you know? Like, yeah, and he just didn't have the tools nor the resources to make that movie, you know, to his vision, to where, like, you watch The Quick and the Dead, and it's almost like, I get to make a Western with Universal? That's fucking awesome.
Well, and talk about a cast, but also people before they blew up. Like, you got Leo right before he did Titanic. You got Sharon Stone at the height of her career. You got Russell Crowe right after Virtuosity, but before he did L.A. Confidential and
right.
And really blew up. You know, then was doing
Gene Hackman.
Sharon
Stone.
I said Sharon Stone. Like, you have Keith David.
Oh, yeah.
Pops in. You have Mark Boone Jr. is, like, the kind of scarred dude. It's pretty wild. Like, it's a pretty... And also, Sharon Stone is full movie star.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because she's basically the man with no name. She's silent. She barely speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And she's so amazing in this movie. Like, it's one of my favorite Sharon Stone performances.
It's also... The other thing is that it came from this run in the early 90s with Universal, where, like, they were empowering these genre dudes. Like, Wes Craven was making movies for them. He was making stuff like People Under the Stairs and Serpent in the Rainbow.
Coscarelli for Phantasm 2.
Yeah, Don Coscarelli gets to make Phantasm 2. Sam Raimi gets to make this, Army of Darkness, Darkman, Quick and the Dead. Like, Universal became a home. You had Tremors coming out of Universal. It became a home for these horror and genre filmmakers to really, like, flex their muscles to a degree that they probably wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
I can't even imagine what the shooting schedule was for Quick and the Dead, because there's some setups in that.
Yeah.
Where it's an hour and a half movie, but you're like, that one shootout between, I think it's, I forget which characters, but it's just dolly zoom after dolly zoom after dolly zoom, like 18 of them in a row. I'm like, that must have taken like a week to shoot like 5 seconds of that fucking film. It's insane.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like, this is the same guy who, again, for talk about love of like genre stuff, it's like John Woo comes over and makes, you know, Hard Target for Universal. Sam Raimi produces it. And like that, you know, the stories behind that movie that came out were like, you know, the studio totally doubting John Woo, and Sam Raimi became basically like the diplomat who like worked between the two, because like it went over budget and Woo was like shooting all kinds of wild setups and everything. And the producers were like, what the fuck are we doing here? And Raimi would be like, no, it's cool, man. Like, it's like, this guy knows what he's doing. He's amazing. Even though they totally doubted him the whole time.
Yeah. And that story too of like, they were like, hey, his job was to keep Woo in check.
Right.
And Raimi, like, day one was like, I love you, man. Do whatever you want to fucking do. And
I brought you here for a reason, more or less.
But I mean, up until lately, I mean, he's producing stuff like Crawl with Aja. I mean, it's like he knows how to find talent too. Like, he's got an eye for like good directors, I think, too. Like, good genre people.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. Love him or hate him, we kind of also have Sam Raimi to thank for Fede Alvarez.
Yeah, totally.
Who's now making Alien movies and like crafting a whole universe around that franchise. Like, and a lot of people love Don't Breathe and everything. Like, he knows who to partner with and who to work with that's young and hungry.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the sequels?
I've seen Darkman. I have seen them. I did not get to rewatch them for this episode.
I did.
Yeah.
And they're super fun. Like, Darkman 2 in particular. So, Darkman 2, The Return of Durant, is like, the best way I can put it is that it's like the return of Swamp Thing, of the Darkman
series.
Which
I love.
I know. It's low budget, super silly, super rubbery, but like really pulpy and goofy. And like, they were both directed by this guy. I believe his name is Bradford May. He also shot the movies himself. But like, he directs them for like because they were direct-to-video films. And he really, talk about a guy who's like, okay, almost operating on like the Corman rules of like something has to happen like every 7 minutes or whatever. Like he's blowing up cars. He has a car chase with a machine gun and everything early on. Like he really deliver, and he also like delivers the tone that's similar to the original Dark Man, where it's like a little goofy, a little gothic. Arnold Vosloo from The Mummy plays Dark Man in 2 and 3. And also 3 has one of the best titles ever. It's just called Dark Man 3, Die, Dark Man, Die. Like, that's great. And Jeff Fahey is the bad guy in the third one. And I'm pretty sure he was paid in cocaine because he's just like sweaty and wide eyed and just really having the time of his life playing this villain in a Dark Man film. But like, it was also a great reminder of like, back then we had not just like DTV movies, but like MCA Universal was doing this entire kind of spin-off line in TV. And they were putting like Rowdy Roddy Piper and like Billy Blank's movies like on the tape. They were partnering with Shapiro Glickenhaus to make, you know, Shakedown style action films. But they also did the Action Pack, I think that was on the USA Network, to where there were all the Midnight Run and Smokey of the and the Bandit TV movies that they made. Now, neither are great, because like the Midnight Run movies has Christopher McDonald playing the Jack Walsh character. I don't know if you've ever seen them. I can't remember who plays the Bandit in the, I think there's 4 Smokey and the Bandit TV
movies. But didn't Needham do all of them?
Yeah, Hal Needham came back and directed all of them. You couldn't really tell. Like, let's be real. None of them have, like, any kind of Hooper energy to them or anything. But, like, there were tracking down, and also just, again, evidence of, like, at a certain time period, people were churning out this type of entertainment at a pretty rapid pace. And it shows how, like, culture has shifted from there, because, like, we don't watch action movies like this anymore. We don't produce action movies like this anymore outside of, like, you know, the Costas Mandalore and fucking Scott Adkins style, right, like DTV programmers. Like, those, like, paved the way for those modern ones to exist. Like, Hard Target 2 is a Scott Adkins film that feels like it shares DNA with these like Dark Man sequels and this stuff and that MCA and Universal were producing in the 90s that were just like a DTV ready, like, programmers that honestly are entertaining in their own right.
Well, just that whole history too, even outside MCA Universal, of just like, you make one decent hit movie, but not enough to do a theatrical sequel. Let's throw these on a DVD.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not even getting.
And that's how I have the Midnight Run and Smokey and the Bandit ones, is that they're like, I think they're actually called Action Pack bundles.
Yeah.
You know, you get 3 features on one of those janky DVD sets that you now find in like the Walmart dollar bin.
Hell yeah.
But I mean, that's one of the things that I love most about this movie, is that it feels like a time capsule for like what a certain type of filmmaking or a certain era of filming really felt like. Because when I watch the Dark Man sequels, I can literally smell like Blockbuster Video, you know, while I watch them. It almost has like a Proustian effect of like transporting me to those shitty candy and microwave popcorn stinking aisles.
Yeah, it's also that Raimi, and then through the sequels as well, was through all his films, the guy doesn't have an ounce of cynicism in him.
No.
Right? And any those films today would, you think about the Anaconda trailer today, which is this meta.
Jesus Christ.
You know, and it's like, you can't just do the thing. We're not able to just make that
movie.
When
did Paul Rudd betray us?
I don't know, man.
It sucks. Between the Ant-Man movies and this, I just feel like we lost one there. Then again, he's still making David Wayne movies in Friendship, so I can't hate him forever.
Right.
You know, he has a real one for them, one for me kind of mindset.
Yeah, but Raimi, though, what I always liked about him is he's very sincere. And, like, there's that moment in Spider-Man 2. Sorry to keep bringing that up, but I think it's a great example of just how he's able to balance between tones is, you know, he he pulls those kids out of the way of a truck, and he's like, all right, no more playing in the street, kids. They're like, yes, sir, Mr. Spider-Man. It's like, it's so genuine, but also fucking hilarious.
Well, and also the weird moment where, like, Spider-Man on the train car, or, like, all of the New York citizens throwing rocks at Green Goblin in the first one, or them passing Spider-Man around on the train car in part two.
Yeah.
Like, he has real affection for people in, like, New York City. And, like, when those guys, like, chant, like, it's New York, you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. Like, post 9/11, like, you could tell, like, he had a lot really of channeling a feeling there.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because we lost the teaser trailer for the original Spider-Man. I remember we had a copy of that. The one on our trailer reel when we were projectionists at the theater is the one where Spider-Man swings between the two towers and, like, is pursuing that helicopter of, like, criminals. And it, you know, it got pulled.
And then he puts the web between the two towers and there's the helicopter sitting on it. You're like, I saw it before Jurassic Park 3. I remember that in 2001.
Yeah. And then it vanished forever because thanks, terrorists. Look what you took from us. You want to get to questions?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're back with questions about Sam Raimi's Dark Man. Martin, top three Raimi, go.
Number one is honestly Spider-Man 2. I love it so much.
I mean, it's the best superhero movie ever.
It's just full stop. Like, I rewatched it today and yesterday.
Did I ever tell you the story about seeing that movie for the first time? Where I was a projectionist at a movie theater. Mm. We actually got the print, like, a day early. And we canceled. It was like a 9-screen movie theater. There was one theater that was only playing, like, one movie one time a day. So we canceled that one screening. And then we roped the theater off. We built the print. And then basically I called my friend Tony, and we held our own private 2-person screening of Spider-Man 2, like, in the middle of the day on, like, a Tuesday. And it was glorious. When it ended, we watched it again.
I saw my brother opening night. And we were, like, skipping out of the theater. We were so fucking jazzed.
It was incredible. Like, it really is, you know, beyond, like, the Spider-Man of it all. Like, he just nailed this kind of whimsy that went along with the character. And also, it has some classic, you know, Raimi set pieces, like the raindrops keep falling on my head and like the musical stuff. Like, it's a guy who's just in love with cinema, using, you know, the biggest IP of all time to as a canvas for, like, his love of movies.
Yep. It's just in the best action scene in any comic book film, which is on the train.
The train set piece. It's incredible.
I watch it again. Every time that he gets thrown, he flies to the lattice work of that, like, bridge.
Oh my God.
I whoop every fucking time. I can't help it, man.
Well, and dude, Alfred Molina as Doc Ock, he's so good.
Same as, like, Willem Dafoe in the first one. Like, he gets these amazing performances.
So, Willem Dafoe in the first one, are we sure?
I am sure. Well, he's eating scenery. Willem Dafoe is thinking, I think he's the first one, I think he's watching Burton's Batman. And thinking, I'm the Joker. And I think Molina brings a whole nuance to it. Like, he's great. And he's really maniacal when he becomes, like, the evil version of Doc Ock, when, like, the arms take over.
How do you feel about Thomas Hayden Church as Sandman in Spider-Man 3?
I think he's great. I think he's the best part of that movie.
What about Topher Grace as Eddie Brock?
That's unfortunate.
You think so? You think he's that bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Venom in Spider-Man 3 just... It's crazy that the Tom Hardy Venom movies are that much better. It's like an iteration of the character.
It's pretty wild.
Anyway, what's your number two?
Number two, I would do Army of Darkness.
Really? That high?
Yeah, because similarly, I just...
Crazy talk, but I'll let you continue.
And then I just love that movie. It was I had it on VHS. I watched it all the time, elementary, middle school, high school, just repeatedly. Real comfort food movie, you know.
Did you own any of Anchor Bay's 900 editions of that film?
Do you know what's funny? I never did. Because really? It was like, it overwhelmed me because it feel like every 3 minutes a new like Anchor Bay, you're like, well, this Necronomicon has a new poofy face on it. And I'm like, I don't fucking.
I never knew what cut to buy because they're like the Boomstick edition has like a director's cut of the movie. And I would watch them all and I'd be like, aren't they all, they all feel the same. Like, I can't figure out the differences here.
Yeah, and, like, you have one extra special feature. Like, all right. And then I would say Darkman is number three. But a close fourth would be Simple Plan, just in terms of how amazing that rewatch was. Like, that is a great fucking movie.
Sure.
But how about you?
Darkman is number one.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it's as good as this type of cinema gets, you know, even with Spider-Man 2 existing. If we're talking favorites, like Spider-Man 2 is the best.
Yeah.
Like nothing is as good as that movie on a pure like craft level. And there's a lot of great craft in Raimi's filmography. But I mean, like you watched that movie and it's mind-blowingly good.
Yeah.
But Darkman, these are my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Darkman is number one for me. It's the movie I return to time and again. I get wrapped up in the emotion of it all. Like we haven't even talked about the ending. How the ending like literally gives me chills every time. That final speech that he gives and like the whole idea of like the man becoming a monster and that last line of like, I'm everyone, no one, everywhere, nowhere. You could call me Dark Man. And the movie just ends. And it's like, and Bruce Campbell's face in the crowd. That shot of Campbell in the crowd, like, is perfect.
And he's looking scared. Like, it's a really cool.
It's incredible.
It's a wild performance just for that one little shot.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's just, it's so good. Like, I'm getting chills right now. Like,
me too.
Just talking about it because it's just, we haven't even talked about, like, the whole set piece at the end and the steel beams where, like, the main bad guy is fucking firing, you know
rivets
at him and, like, pins his hand against the steel and, like, he's sweeping, like, through the fucking air on those chains and stuff. Like, it's just an incredible fight. And, like, the end, like, discussion where they're on the elevator and just the shadowy way that he shoots the whole thing. Also, fucking Danny Elfman's score for this movie is as good as he's ever been.
Yep.
So it's just, anyway, Darkman's pretty great. You should watch it.
Yes.
That's the moral of the story. Two is Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. What are we doing here? It's a real, that you want to talk about a movie I've watched a bazillion times. Like, Raimi was my hero growing up. Like, he was the guy I wanted to be. Even when I was in film school, he was the guy whose, like, camera moves I would try to replicate, like, with a Canon XL1 and also in editing, like, speed it up so it felt like the camera was flying and everything. Like, it's just, he was the guy that if you wanted to make movies, you're like, well, if that guy can do it, like, we all can. And then you realize that, like, not only was he wildly, like, inventive, he just had so much raw talent for how to frame a shot that you can't replicate that.
It's a wild step up from part one.
Oh God.
It's just, you're like, wow, you know?
And I mean, three is a Simple Plan.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just like,
what a fucking movie, dude.
That's the closest he ever came to making a Coen Brothers
movie. No, it's seriously a Coen Brothers movie.
Like, it's, you know, and also the performances in it are just so incredible. That final moment with Billy Bob Thornton is so incredibly heartbreaking. Bill Paxton, the only place I would push back is I don't know if it's Bill Paxton's best performance because One False Move exists.
Which is also great. Billy Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like that, they're one and two for me. And also, I mean, like Frailty, which we saw last year, he's really quite good in. Near Dark, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
honestly, just playing Hudson and Aliens.
How the guy, who's Bill fucking Paxton.
There's that moment in Simple Plan. I literally was tearing up watching it. I'd forgotten the scene. Oh my God. I was like watching at the airport on my phone, like on this wedding trip, right? And I'm like totally just fucking locked in on this movie, ignoring like everything around me. And it's where Bill Paxton is dropping Billy Bob Thornton off at home to pick up his truck.
Oh,
and he tells the story
And he goes, if I get rich, I can get married. And he's like, oh, you don't need money to get married. And he's like, so what about that? What about, you know, Sarah, what's her name in high school? He's like, yeah, that was a bet. And it's this whole thing. He goes, yeah, a friend, they bet that she wouldn't. But you know what? Even after that month was up and she won the bet, she'd still smile at me sometimes. I thought that was pretty cool. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, it is hard. It is. And the whole thing of, like, the end where he's just like, you know, spoiler alert, sorry. But it's like, A, I have nothing to live for. B, yeah, I will.
The whole what does it matter speech when he's on his knees and he's basically just do it.
Yeah.
And you take the money because you have a family and you have something to live
and
for.
I'll fuck it up. The and story I'll doesn't work if up. The story doesn't work. Because he is a fuck up. You know, he is always the.
If he's around, he'll always be the wheel that breaks and falls off.
It is like what. And the ability you're talking earlier about his handling of actors, the early scenes when things are good, the funny way that he's talking to the other buddy, like they're really realistic but also heightened dialogue.
Oh yeah,
it's Coen's just through and through. The way they're able to bullshit, and it's Scott B. Smith who wrote the book and also wrote The Ruins, which is an amazing book. And so like the writing is like next level, and Raimi really knows how to milk it. I mean, and a great Bridget Fonda performance too.
Oh God, yeah,
as kind of Lady Macbeth.
Oh,
full on Lady Macbeth character.
She and they're two of my favorite kind of Lady Macbeth stand-ins. Is that this? She's incredible in it as Bill Paxton's Lady Macbeth. But she reminds me a lot of the same performance that Laura Linney gives in Mystic River for Clint Eastwood, where she's always behind Sean Penn, kind of pushing him forward and pushing him towards being a criminal again. Like, they both...
Gotta do what you gotta do.
They have a lot of mirrors to each other that are really fascinating. I was listening to the Blank Check podcast recently, and they were talking, because they've been doing the Coen brothers filmography, and they were talking about The Man Who Wasn't There with Billy Bob Thornton. And they had an interesting... I think it was David Sims on there had an interesting observation where he was like, for a time in the mid-90s, you could make the argument that Billy Bob Thornton was the greatest American character actor.
Yeah.
Like when he was ripping things off from like One False Move to A Simple Plan, showing up in even bit parts in Tombstone. But then
Armageddon.
Well, that's he goes on. He's like, and then he goes on to be in stuff like Armageddon, Sling Blade. Like, he just becomes, like, the sturdiest, most reliable guy that's out there to where, like, when he would show up all the way up to, like, Bad Santa.
Yeah.
And you'd, like, he had a thing that he did. And he's, like, in Bad Santa is where he kind of puts the end point of this as being is that, like, then he became the Bad Santa kind of caricature to where, like, he's in shit, like, you know, Linklater's, like, Bad News Bears remake. Is that it's, like, what do people want more of? Oh, this guy being a dick.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like that isn't quite it. Is that like for a minute there, Billy Bob was like a legit chameleon because the guy who plays, you know, the smartest dude in the room in fucking Armageddon is also the guy who plays the mentally handicapped brother in One False Move in A Simple Plan, and they're both like incredible performances.
Yeah,
so double feature. With Darkman.
I'm going to cheat.
Shocker.
I am going to do Darkman with the Mantis TV series, which was Raimi's.
What a wild pick.
But it was my favorite show when it came on. I watched it every Friday night. It's Carl Lumley.
I know what it is.
And it's a very, it's actually similar. It feels like it's the same world also as Darkman. And it was, Raimi was out doing a lot of TV. He was doing Hercules, Xena, Briscoe County Jr. with Bruce Campbell, which is an amazing, fun show.
That's true.
Well,
he was operating in that action pack. Like the Xena movies were part of the action pack too.
When he shot it all in New Zealand.
Right.
He was like the first guy to go down there and then really make that relationship with all the crews there. And then Carl Urban was on, I think it was on Xena as like a god or something. But Mantis, for those who haven't seen it, it's a really fun show. It is Carl Lumley, and he's in a wheelchair, but he's an inventor.
and he's basically Iron Man, but it's almost like Daredevil, where it's like, how can the blind lawyer be the superhero? But he's created this exoskeleton suit, which allows him to walk, and he's also superpowered. And it was just a superhero. It was almost like, it reminded me a lot of that Flash TV series with like Mark Hamill as the trickster, like the early 90s stuff. But it did feel always as a kid, because I had already seen Darkman, and go, oh, this feels like a Darkman sequel to me.
I could see that.
Like, they're almost like the same world. And now I kind of want to watch it again.
For me, the double feature, like, originally I was going to go with The Shadow just to do that, because you can kind of track the history of it. But I'm going to do one that is, like, kind of a classic, to where, like, if you were going to an Exhumed show and they were like, Exhumed is going to do Darkman, you're like, fuck yeah. And then they're like, stay after. Because they would always program the second movie as being some kind of weird oddity that you kind of caught afterwards. And I was going to say the Walter Hill movie, Johnny Handsome.
Oh, I love that movie.
1989, which, no shock that you love it.
well, it is Walter Hill.
Yeah, it's not great, but man, with Mickey, the cast in it, Mickey Rourke, Ellen Barkin, Forrest Whitaker, Morgan Freeman, Lance Henriksen, Peter Jason, Scott Wilson, like, it's a really nasty little crime revenge movie that also deals with disfigurement. Like, I think it would just be a cool B-side. And also just, like, again, one of our guys in Walter Hill that, like, if you got a chance to really pair one of his lesser known works with fucking Darkman, and they're both, I think, you know, 90 to 95 minutes a piece. So, like, you're literally getting two movies in a 3-hour block that, like, whether you love it or hate Johnny Handsome, like, it's worth sitting through at least once. It's got that same kind of real hard boiled noir energy that all of Walter Hill's kind of best movies do, and worst movies, frankly.
Yes.
Remake, redo, prestige series.
Straight up remake of Darkman.
Why hasn't it happened yet?
No.
I actually had, when I was thinking about the questions when we were going to record tonight and everything, is that, like, that was the main one that hit me, is that I was like, Darkman feels like it's just right there. And, like, it's so, it has name recognition. It has, like, people could go back and discover the original film. It has Liam Neeson and Frances McDormand, who's now an Academy Award winner.
Both of them.
That's what I mean. Like, it has all this stuff, but it's, like, it just feels like a thing that's right there and nobody touches it. I wonder if there's, like, a rights thing or somebody.
Well, again, Raimi's so generous with his, like, IPs, where it's, like, you know, he hires Fede Alvarez, he hires the guy who did Evil Dead Lives, which I don't like, but he likes to, like, help out these other filmmakers get a start. Imagine the same way Fede did Evil Dead, someone taking a more serious tone, a more serious tone to Darkman, and going hard with it. Like, almost like Dredd was in comparison to, like, Judge Dredd, where it's, like, a smaller movie, but it's, like...
Man, now you got me thinking about what Alex Garland's Darkman would look like.
No, I mean, fuck off, right? I mean, it'd be insane.
It kind of fits his wheelhouse in a weird way, now that I'm thinking about it. I know that
all the elements are there.
Rubin, who did Hard Eyes.
Oh, he's great.
I know that there's been a running joke within the horror community where he's wanted, like, his dream project is to make Darkman for the longest time.
He'd be good, honestly. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Hard Eyes is amazing. And I like Scare Me a lot, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Werewolves Within.
Yeah, it's, like, awesome. He hasn't really made a bad movie.
Yeah, he's got the chops. Yeah. And, like, if you gave him a bigger budget to kind of play with, I mean, Hard Eyes kind of proved that he knows his way around a film set, a bigger film set, at least. But I was also thinking of, like, I know this is a weird choice. And I think part of it might be because I want to see the Nirvana, the band, the movie that just premiered at Toronto. But I'd love to see, like, Matt Johnson make it, because I love Blackberry and the Dirties. And he comes from that same kind of DIY aesthetic with making Nirvana, the band, the movie, that TV series. But, like... he would be a fun one. I would just like to see some really young, energetic, hungry filmmaker come up and do Darkman the same way that, like, Raimi did Darkman, and just kind of put their own spin on it.
It's hard not to think about the Toxic Avenger remake. of how that can go wrong. You know what I mean? Of a person taking what was a much wilder IP, but for a really tonally messy movie without a lot, it's not good. And I'm sorry to just take the opportunity, but it feels like the same wheelhouse. That could have been a much different movie.
Yeah.
You know, and this is, I feel like someone could fuck up Darkman really badly.
You think so?
I think they could.
Well,
I think because tone is so important to this, I think, to anything Raimi. And again, Fede nailed that with like, well, I'm just going to go dark as fuck and mean.
Yeah.
Evil Dead.
And man, if you actually played it without any of the goofiness and like a true tragedy, that could go one way or the other.
Yeah, because you might get laughed out of the theater, you know?
That's fair. Who would be Darkman?
I would do the same thing as hire some, like, actor, you know?
I've got mine in my head.
Ooh, I gotta think.
You want mine first?
Yeah.
Boyd Holbrook as Darkman.
Justin Theroux.
Oh, wow.
I think.
Is he too old?
No. But he's beautiful. I think the guy. I think whoever it should be kind of gorgeous. Like you really want to show them again, Phantom of the Opera, right? You want them to be beautiful and then disfigured from there.
Yeah, kind of the same sort of way that even, you know, Nolan steals a little bit of Darkman for his Two-Face with Harvey Dent.
Oh my God! Know? Well, I mean, like the end of The Dark Knight is Darkman.
Oh yeah,
call me the Dark Knight. He goes off like I'll be waiting. I'm the hero you need. If you need me, it's the same fucking, that's like, not saying Nolan stole Darkman, but like thematically it's very close.
Yeah. I mean, a few movies do the Darkman ending is that, and of course there's some of my favorites, but John Wick 2 does the same Darkman ending too. Like, because for me, John Wick 2 is the one where he just straight up does beat for beat the Dark Knight ending too.
Yep.
Where it's just tell him I'm going to kill them all. And then he just runs into the night and you're like, oh my God, I can't wait to see part three.
Or even the fucking Thomas Jane Punisher. He's standing on the fucking bridge and it moves. He goes, call me the Punisher, puts his head down, you know, cut to black. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, if we're being real, it's the Road Warrior ending.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Darkman is doing the Road Warrior, the whole, like, he lives on in our memory.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But, I mean, that's fucking awesome, too.
It's one of the coolest endings of, you know, cinematic history.
Yeah. So, if you're going to steal, you got to steal from the best. Face Melter?
100%.
Yeah.
Like, no doubt.
It's just stuck with me for so long. It's still, watching it again for the 500th time or whatever it was this go around with somebody who'd never seen it, I still was into it and it flew by.
Yep.
And I was just like, and they liked it too, so it was just kind of like, it's one of those movies that you just put it on in front of the uninitiated and it still plays because like he's so good at that type of filmmaking. Like the scene where Darkman fucking pops Ted Raimi's head up through the manhole cover and has the, you know, is torturing him with the cars and stuff. It's so amazing. That shot where he's holding him up and the fucking water's just running down and soaking him and he's screaming the entire time. Like, that nobody is this good. Like, nobody's as good as Sam Raimi.
No, he's untouchable.
Well, Martin, this has been great. A personal shared favorite in Darkman.
Yes.
We're not really sure what we have next. We actually got to talk about that right when we cut our mics, but you have to tune in next time to see what we come up with. Bye.
See ya.